Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
I'm just standing by for one of our favorite commentators, Arun Pai, who's going to be joining us this morning as we talk about all things AI, Elon Musk coming up as well in the discussion. Arun, are you here with me?
Yes, I am.
Oh, fantastic. Good morning. All right. Arun Pai is from the investments team at Monk's Hill Ventures. Let's talk about the AI risk, Arun. Elon Musk says AI that is smarter than people could emerge next year unless someone cuts the power or sustainability impacts computing demands or there's a shortage of computing chips. So let's take a step back. So he's warning that, and he said this in his interview on his social network X, Musk saying, we need to worry about a Terminator future in order to avoid a Terminator future. Arun, do we need to worry about superhuman AI?
Look, I mean, honestly, whenever any new technology comes out, there's always going to be this fear of the unknown, right?
Yeah.
And I think Mark Andreessen of A16Z, like the massive venture capital fund fame, he highlighted this interesting story. You know, when bicycles were invented, Michelle, like back in like the early 1800s, what it actually led to and one of the first use cases was it empowered or enabled the younger audience to basically travel by bike to neighboring towns, villages, other people's houses, so that they can go on dates. And it became such a rampant issue for society at that point of time, because prior to that, you could basically control, quote-unquote, your kids, that newspaper ads started coming out that basically showcased a person riding a bike. And that if you rode a bike for too long, because of the wind strength, your face will become flat.
What?
And this became huge ads, okay? Like all across newspapers in the U.S. Let me give you another example. I remember this is during my own time, right? I was in college from 2003, which is around the time that Facebook started. And Yahoo made a $1 billion buyout acquisition term for Facebook. And there was this really famous author who, is writing like all these like massive books and stuff right now, basically came out with this huge article saying the world has gone crazy. Mark should just basically sell this thing off for $1 billion and run away and live happily ever after, right? Because this tech is junk. Nobody cares about it. What is social media in that shape and form, in that kind of construct, that modality? Fast forward 5 years later, Facebook obviously went from, leave alone $1 billion. Right now it's like over $1 trillion. But either way, even just 5 years from that point of time, this article came out by the same author saying, oh my God, this is like worse than nuclear weapons. This technology is extremely scary. No one person should have control over it. And there's a discussion to be had about that, right? But either way, I think the point I'm trying to say is whenever something new comes out, people naturally get scared because either this whole Terminator story, or it could be the social fabric of society is changing. It does cause a lot of disruption. But if you look back over the past 200 years, it's eventually always been for higher productivity, higher efficiency, higher standard of living, and all of that good stuff, right? We are currently living as an average middle-class human being, we are living better than the richest person on the planet, just like, say, 70, 80 years ago. The amount of technology that we have at our disposal, at our fingertips, like from media, entertainment, being able to travel across the globe at a very, very relatively cheap price, the ease of which we have food on our table, electricity, across the board, right? Like technology has definitely been a massive force of reckoning for the better. And I feel a lot of naysayers, even within the technology space, right? It's interesting to hear Elon Musk's point. But there are all these like vested interests and agendas about it because he was not first to the table regarding this. He was pounding the table at EVs because he was at the forefront of it. Mm. If you read his email exchange with Sam Altman and the rest of the OpenAI team, which he was a founding member of, he stepped out of it. And now it's kind of like, it's a case of sour grapes, I feel. So, I don't know. I think I have a bit mixed views on it. I'm biased. Like, everyone is biased in their own ways. I'm biased because I'm in the venture capital, early stage, disruptive technology space. Mm-hmm. So I would love to see, you know, the next founder, the next Zuckerberg, the next Jensen Huang come out and come up with some amazing thing.
Well, speaking of Jensen Huang, you know, the NVIDIA head, the CEO of NVIDIA recently said, AI, and I agree with him, AI is the tech industry's single greatest contribution to social elevation.
You know, I'll find it extremely hard to disagree with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
look at if you just Google world's largest market capitalization companies, right? The top 10. Mm. 7 of them are in tech, okay? And this is all like a recent-ish phenomenon. I'm talking about the last like 20, 30 years. Of the other three, let's eliminate Saudi Aramco because it's a question mark whether this is a company or whether it's like a sovereign nation, right? So let's eliminate that. The other two are basically Warren Buffett, like Berkshire Hathaway, which, you know, once in a lifetime, once in a generation kind of investing talent. But please do note that of the close to $1 trillion market cap of Berkshire, mm-hmm. close to 20% of that, $200 billion, is Apple stock. And lastly, to round out the list, is Eli Lilly, which is a pharmaceutical company.
Right.
That, again, went up like close to, it's up like 7-8x over the past, literally like 4 or 5 years, coming up to like $500, $600 billion market cap, is because of their new weight loss drugs. And what do you know? What enabled them to come up with that? Technology.
There you
right?
go.
So mm-hmm. you just have complete domination, and for a rightful reason. It's literally elevated the way that we live our lives right now. So it's an amazing time that we're living in, Michelle.
Completely agree.
Now,
I don't want to age myself here by implying that I was around when the telephone was invented. But when the telephone was invented, people thought we wouldn't have quality conversations, that we wouldn't because we didn't have all the, you know, body contact, I mean, visuals and all that. And look at how our perceptions have changed as we come to be more familiar with tech. So yeah, totally yeah. agree with you there, really. And by the way, Elon Musk has said a lot of things that haven't panned out. Think of 2017. He said his Neuralink brain chip would be in the market in about 4 years. Didn't happen. SpaceX, fly to the Mars. Fly to Mars, 2018, he said it would happen. Still has not.
Oh, really? he's working on it, right? And I'll never try to put down an entrepreneur or a person who's trying to disrupt things. It's just become this weird thing in the technology space, I feel, where because big tech has become so big, they're trying to erect these regulatory barriers around their own business. Like, OpenAI now is so big that they are trying to basically control the narrative of who should be creating generative LLM. Elon Musk is big,
LLM?
Such a huge voice.
Sorry.
Language processing model.
Oh,
like basically the foundational model of the generative AI.
Mm. Well, speaking about big tech erecting fences, let me move on to our topic two, Arun. Meta is looking to roll out the next generation of custom AI chips that are termed MTIA. So as I understand it, it's part of its long-term plan to build infrastructure over how it, as in Meta, uses AI in its services. So it wants these chips to work with its technological infrastructure and to power its future advancements in GPUs. My question for you, Arun, is what do you think of Meta's new foray into chips to power its AI services? What do you think this could mean for Meta and the AI race?
Look, it's great to see because I think this is the nature of capitalism at the end of the day, right? At its core. If you have all of these, you know, those 7 large tech companies, one of them is NVIDIA, so these other 6 large tech companies that are out there that are basically all beholden to one company to come up with its hardware, that's a massive concentration risk, right? So naturally, when they are sitting and seeing even if it's their own vendor, suddenly becomes so powerful in this space, they will naturally try to disrupt / find an alternative vendor / try to create something by themselves. Meta, and massive kudos to Mark Zuckerberg for literally pivoting the story from when Meta was all about the metaverse, mm-hmm. and the company share was, I think, sub $100, has now basically 5x'd itself. The share price is over 500, over $1 trillion of market cap. It's completely pivoted the story to now how it's becoming like an AI first company. And it's not just a story. The guy is putting like some serious chunk of change in this, right? I think he came out saying they're going to be spending close to $35 billion this year on infrastructure. And look, a lot of that will go to NVIDIA, right? I think he's bought like close to 350,000 H100 chips of NVIDIA. But even if a sliver of that kind of starts going into them creating their own chips for mm-hmm. their own custom use cases, eventually, if you know the focus is still there, it's going to create a dent. But to be clear, I don't think the biggest moat of NVIDIA is just the hardware aspect. And you know, we talked in the show about this on your show in the past. Hmm. It's about that software layer, CUDA, that they've built on top. And that has basically enabled them to really entrench themselves with the developer community, where if you basically want to build anything AI, hardware, NVIDIA, the middleware, the software layer on top, basically CUDA, and then you go into all the other applications, the front-end applications, the other LLM models, and blah, 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 all that other good stuff. So I think the moat that NVIDIA has created is an extremely strong one.
Wow.
And I think that's going to be very tough to break, to be honest.
Okay. NVIDIA shares, by the way, down 3.87%, closing at $840.35, and some see a flat base with a buy point at 974. Moving into chips, Meta's move designed to reduce its dependency on semiconductors that NVIDIA supplies the hardware, as you say. When we think of forerunners in terms of competition for NVIDIA, I'm just curious, do you think Meta, Intel, Google, and Amazon are the clear forerunners?
So I think any like big tech business, like all the names that you mentioned, definitely is going to be the obvious choice for more longer term competition, right? Because what we were discussing in the last point, Meta obviously got truckloads of cash thanks to its social media / advertising business, as does Google / Alphabet. So whichever way they've got their mainstream of earning money, realizing that they're beholden to NVIDIA, never a good thing. So they're naturally going to take a certain percentage spend of their earnings and go out there and try to either form consortiums, which some of them have, to come up with new chips, go at it themselves, etc. So I think that's one big area or block of competition. Let's not completely write off the more traditional competition, which is the other hardware guys, right? You have your AMD and Intel, who've been written off for a really long time. Mm-hmm. But I think especially in the case of AMD, they seem to be finally pulling up their socks and trying to try and actually put up a serious competition, competitive front with NVIDIA. Another company in this space that might be a little bit more controversial is Huawei.
Mm.
And obviously, geopolitical risks are rife. But reading some technical blogs about this, it does seem like they do have the required underlying tech. So, excuse me. I think that could be another interesting competitive angle to take a look at, too.
All right. We'll let you have a little bit of a break, Arun. Have a sippy sip of water if you need some, because we need you to power on for our last topic. Just kidding. All right. So Amazon's CEO, Andy Jassy, wrote a letter to shareholders. He irritated some because he said, you know, our relationships with our sellers are the best ever. And some of the sellers said, no, they're not happy with the fees. But apart from that, you know, he's touting that Amazon, the future of AI will run on Amazon. So let's take a closer look at the stock. Its share price more than doubled in the past 16 months. So people buying Amazon like there's no tomorrow. Some saying the cost reductions are paying off for the company or its investments in same-day delivery paying off. Of course, we look for its earnings soon. Current stock price around $155 and it trades at a valuation of about 22 and a half times cash from operations on a trailing 12-month basis. Is Amazon still a good investment, Arun?
Absolutely. I mean, so you mentioned about Andy Jassy's shareholder letter. Some amazing, an amazing view or insight into how the CEO of the company thinks, obviously, and what his vision is for not just the business, but how he sees the world. I think it might be still available online, but he came on to CNBC right after he published his letter. And it was more of like a 30-minute conversation with the person, right? So firstly, he had massive shoes to fill, obviously, right? When you take over the world's richest guy, or second richest guy's company that he founded, there were a lot of questions around, like the way when Steve Jobs, the baton passed from Steve Jobs. I think the clarity with which he was at least able to communicate how he views Amazon as being at the center, at the core of this massive generative AI change, was something that was quite impressive. Now, has that being said, though, from a neutral investor perspective, is it fair to say that Microsoft kind of leapfrogged Google as well as Amazon in this generative AI race?
Mm-hmm.
I would say that would be fair to say, right? Because Microsoft was the old, boring, just basically Office guys, right? Like Microsoft Office, that is. Like your Word, your Excel, all your standard Office productivity tools.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what Satya Nadella did with this whole OpenAI, and even when, you know, Sam Altman was fired, kind of brought back, he just went out there and said, look, $10 billion is noise for us. It's a rounding error for Microsoft. We will take over the entire OpenAI team. No issues at all. And that was just a stroke of genius, right? So it just suddenly led any 22-year-old who's graduating from Stanford, MIT, any technical university, or otherwise, to suddenly take a look at this company and this leadership and be like, oh, wow, this person's out there trying to rally for us. So they are definitely, I would say, as of now, looking at these three different companies, Microsoft's probably at the forefront of it. That being said, though, similar to what NVIDIA has managed to pull off with their hardware plus their software layer and that kind of a moat, I think what AWS, like Amazon Web Services,
mm-hmm.
has basically done to empower your enterprises, your software, your early stage tech startups to go to the cloud, right? To be like digitally native, to be cloud native, is something that's extremely difficult to disrupt. Amazon has now basically come out and they've made their own couple of $1 billion investments into some foundational models. They're trying to make this huge pitch where connect yourself, your startup, your enterprise, your Fortune 500 company, whoever you are, get your business operations to run digitally on our cloud. We in turn have connected our required, our network with a whole host of different kinds of AI models, LLMs, you name it. So what they're trying to do is basically strengthen their position of, you just deal with us. We have abstracted the technical complications of working with all these other different types of models that are out there. Why do you need to take that pain? You just stick to AWS. You've trusted us for the past 20, 30 years, 20 years of coming up with this. Stick to us. We have ensured that we have the best-in-class models in the back end. We aren't beholden to anyone. And I think that was a risk potentially that Microsoft was going to fall under, that they might only be beholden to OpenAI. They're trying to fix that also. They've invested into a couple of other quote-unquote competitors slash other players in the field in Europe also recently. So everyone's trying to like still figure out and suss out where in the value chain the company should end up being. You have your open AIs of the world that are actually coming up with the models. You have your startups that are trying to provide a UX UI layer on top of those foundational models. And you have your core infrastructure plays like Amazon. Thanks to its massive head start and percentage ownership of just the cloud wallet spend that AWS commands right now, they're just providing that functionality to its users by saying, look, again, come on board to us. We've got our pipes laid out in the back end. You want to use the best of the best models, Anthropic or Gemini or anyone else, you have that access via our cloud. So just stick with us. And I think that's something that was quite interesting. And I think that's why Andy made that comment that regardless of which interesting model comes out, they are still going to be that infrastructure layer in the middle, thanks to AWS. And I think that was quite interesting. Leaving aside all his vision and points about on the retail side, right, which is their e-commerce business, of how he's looking at really enhancing productivity, amount of time for goods to be delivered at your doorstep and how much time. I mean, going through those numbers are just truly mind-boggling, Michelle. Yeah. Like, the scale of the business, truly amazing.
It's a great time to be alive, I have to say, with all this change. And we are so grateful that we have such a gifted tech commentator with us. Arun, thank you for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks as always for having me.
He's Arun Pai from the investments team at Monk's Hill Ventures. I'm Michelle Martin. Thank you so much for your company here on Money and Me.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.